Patients often walk into a clinic with more than a medication list. They're carrying questions they've been collecting from everywhere: social media, podcasts, wellness blogs, late-night searches that start with one concern and quickly become a full inventory of their environment. Their detergent, their shampoo, their cookware, their supplements, their food choices, even the water they drink. And before you can even get to their treatment plan, they're asking a different kind of question entirely. Is any of this safe? Or is it all part of why people get cancer in the first place? Because in today's world, cancer risk isn't just understood through biology or clinical evidence. It's being interpreted through a constant stream of content that connects everyday products and lifestyle choices to long-term disease in ways that can feel both urgent and absolute. Prevention, in that context, starts to expand. It moves from diet and exercise into every corner of daily life. And what begins as a desire for control often becomes a landscape of uncertainty, where everything feels like it might matter and nothing feels fully settled. In this episode, we're joined by Sonia Thomas, PharmD, BCOP, AFMCP, INHC, professor at the Philadelphia College of Osteopathic Medicine, a clinical oncology specialist pharmacist at WellStar Health System, and an integrative nutrition health coach, to explore how this mindset is showing up in practice. I'm Alex Gerlach, and this is Pharmacy Focus Oncology Edition. Thanks so much for taking the time to come on and chat, and looking forward to having this discussion with you. Maybe we can just start with you giving an introduction into yourself and maybe what your career looks like and what you specialize in.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. My name's Sonia, and I am a professor at a pharmacy school. I've been there for about 14 years at PCOM in Georgia. And I am also a clinical oncology specialist. I did my PGY1 followed by my PGY2 in Detroit. And then I'm also an integrative nutrition health coach. And I currently practice at an integrative medicine clinic doing the health coaching as well.
Awesome. So got a lot of different topics we're going to be touching on today, mainly talking about this idea that cancer kind of comes from everywhere. And so what can you trust? What can you do to reduce your risk? How can you create more preventative strategies within your own lifestyle? So we're going to dive into some of the stigma, some of the products. We have detergent, makeup, pesticides. What do people do with that? Should people eat organic? Should they not? And how to balance all of that to create a healthy lifestyle that best suits the individual person and their needs. So why don't we begin and start with what made you tackle this topic? What made you interested in it? And do you see this stuff kind of coming up in your pharmacy practice?
Yes, great question. So I would say a lot of this came about more during COVID and that COVID era, where they were a lot more concerned about, I guess, just people started getting a lot more into the science and talking and listening more about COVID and like the vaccines. And I think they ended up having a lot more questions. It stemmed a lot of questions about supplements, food, just nutrition in general, electrolytes, like all these questions that patients would have. And so when I would counsel them, I was naturally like their go-to person when it came even to even nutrition. And I think after COVID and during COVID, things kind of blew up on social media as well when it came to health and wellness and preventive care. And so I started getting a lot of people asking just how to prevent cancer in general. And then once like the blue zone sort of hit and this longevity phenomenon like started, it sort of blew up for both patients as well as non-patients who are just looking to prevent and live a healthier lifestyle.
Yeah. And I think social media obviously plays a really big role in that. Pretty much anyone can jump onto TikTok, Instagram, post a video of themselves talking about some sort of this thing causes cancer. This is how you can prevent. You should take this supplement because it'll make your brain work better. And so I'm sure that you've probably seen the increase of those kinds of situations where people without credentials can even jump on and start giving health advice, right? So there's, again, like this origin, this idea that everything causes cancer. So what can you say about social media that you think is really amplifying this idea?
So I think it's a lot of things. I think there's a lot with preventive care and things that people talk about when it comes to food. They talk about a lot of supplements, different types of foods, whole foods versus organic and this and that. And I think a lot of it is also blown up by so many companies creating products and supplements and now the way they're marketing it and what they're putting on it. And then there's just in general, kind of in the health world, I feel like there's recently been so many books published by great like physicians and nutritionists and all these people. And there's a huge buzz. And I think the third thing that people didn't really like, I don't know if it was really meant to or not, but hormones has become massive. And I
Yes.
love it because it's always been kind of not talked about. And but I think that has really gone hand in hand with cancer just because of all these hormone disrupting chemicals and products and things like that, and then causing inflammation. And then I also think there's a lot of awareness. Functional medicine has always
Yeah.
been there, but there's a lot more awareness now. And I think that has brought a lot of questions into all these other like buzzwords and terms that people hear, like, oh, leaky gut and inflammation
Yeah.
and cancer is a metabolic disease. And so all of that has sort of contributed to it.
Yeah, and I don't think it's too far off the base, right? Because we do know that cardiometabolic issues, diabetes, obesity are risk factors for cancer because if you're unhealthy, your body can't, your immune system can't properly address things when it's presented with them, whether that's like an infection, bacteria, exposure to specific products or prolonged exposure to specific products or contaminants, like even air pollution, like radon in your house. Like you said, everything causes cancer, right? Anything seems like it can cause cancer. But you mentioned before a couple of different products that have come up as far as interest in social media. Detergent is a really big one. I know that there have been some lawsuits in the past few years. I believe in one of the Northeast states, Tide, they had a big like class action lawsuit against them, and they actually pulled a bunch of Tide products from the market over it. So I wonder if you can share what other products that people think are dangerous, but maybe might be actually fine, or maybe they're actually not. What's the situation looking like there?
Yes, no, you bring up a great point. And I think what's happened with products is just, I think products have blown up. They've been used a lot, right? In the 80s, 90s, when I think a lot of products were created. And I think there's been a big push into clean and organic. And so now there's so many companies that have come out with that, which is great. And I think what ends up happening is everybody gets anxiety and they get stressed. They don't know what to
Yeah.
do. But it's everything, and it's literally anything and everything: toilet paper, aerosol sprays, hairspray, makeup, undergarments, water. And so my biggest takeaway from all of this stuff is it's impossible to avoid it. It's in everything. And honestly, there's no way to avoid it because it's kind of the price we pay for progression. As we
Yeah.
want technology and more products and convenience, it's going to always be there. But I think the biggest things that I always say to focus on are water. I think the biggest thing to focus on in your house is an in-home filter that filters the water you drink, as well as the water you're taking a bath with, everything. So I think that's kind of the number one thing. And along with that, things that we use a lot of that kind of touch our body parts. So, toilet paper. So, there's a lot of stuff about toilet paper and pretty much anything that's white and has to be bleached. Now, you have hormone disrupting chemicals. They're not directly related to cancer by any means, but because they are sort of what they call the start of the inflammation cascade when hormones are uncontrolled for a long period of time, these are just little things that can help, not necessarily have carcinogens. So same with like undergarments, it's not that they necessarily have carcinogens, but that they can disrupt key players, hormones, sleep, that go along with cardiometabolic health and go along with that inflammation cascade. And typically, we always say cancer sort of at the end of that cascade. And that's always kind of the last thing that shows up. So, in terms of ones that are carcinogenic that we should really be mindful of, is probably a lot of aerosol sprays. I will say women use a lot of aerosol sprays for like hairspray, dry shampoo, whatever it might be. These are things to be mindful of. It doesn't mean you should cut it out, but I do think it's a good way to bring awareness to how much of it are you using daily. Is it something, can I use it every other day? Can I use it instead of using it daily? Can I use, maybe if I'm using three products that have certain ingredients, can I go down to one product? And I always say, just start with like, what you use most of. Just focus on that. I don't think it's good for anybody's health to go crazy and then like be super depressed and take away all these products that they always use. So I think it's just a matter of how many and then what do you use the most? How can you decrease the frequency?
And I think that there's a you can always have too much of a good thing. I think that's a pretty common saying. So you mentioned before about like organic foods. And I think that as far as the nutritional landscape in the US looks, we've got seed oils are bad. This is bad for you. Red meat is bad, but actually it's also really good. But what about beef tallow? Like there's all these animal natural products that we're looking at. So is all of that actually worth the price, or was it more marketing? Because I think we can also look at industries. The dairy industry has funded all sorts of studies telling us the nutritional value of milk, right? So there might be some kind of market interests happening there too within companies and the food industries that are running these studies. So can you talk a bit more about just like organic foods, the seed oil debate, and food products that you're seeing are that are really kind of at the forefront of these discussions?
Yes. And so it's just so funny because I've had numerous conversations around this on dairy and red meat and fish and just so many. And then I think the latest conversation I had was about salt. I thought you're supposed to limit salt. Why am I eating more salt? Why are they recommending this? And so, to be honest, for myself, I think I've read many, many. I mean, I've just read so many books about all of this out there, looked at so many studies. And long story short, what I've concluded for what I think has happened is I think that all of it is true. Yes, you do need to eat red meat. But then the people that are saying, don't eat red meat, or in the guidelines, when they say limit, here's the issue. Everybody takes, I think we all take a lot of things to the extreme. So we want a very clear yes or no. And it's not like that. There is no clear yes or no. You, red meat is good for you. Fish is good for you. Dairy is actually good for you. There's a lot of stuff in there that is good for you. But it depends on each individual person. Are these things, are you eating them in moderation? That's the biggest thing, is balance is key with everything. And if you are somebody who is unable to eat it in balance, so for example, beef, you really only need to eat red meat 2 times a week. If you're somebody who can't limit it to 2 times a week and you're going to eat it daily, you're going to eat McDonald's and you're going to eat this and you're going to eat like 8, 10 ounces in a sitting, then no, then it's probably best to tell you to limit or not eat it, right? So there's so many factors into this, but and there's so much evidence. And I think what happens is all the evidence of, well, here's what dairy causes, here's what this causes, it's all when you are going in excess. And I do think with organic, I think it also depends on how many fruits, vegetables, how many dairy products are you actually eating? If you're somebody that's like, all I eat is an apple a day and some carrots, this is all I'm eating, then it's going to be very different than somebody who's eating 30 different fruits and vegetables literally in 2 days. So I think it really depends. I personally follow EWG's Dirty Dozen list. And the 12 fruits and vegetables on there that they've got that are the dirtiest, those are the ones that I invest in and are worth eating organic for that year because it changes. It's not the same all the time. It depends on the soil, it depends on the pesticides. And in general, my take on organic is this, is no, organic isn't necessarily better. However, if they test a certain fruit and vegetable and it's got like 90% pesticides on it, then an organic version may have 60%. So it's going to be less. That's my point. And I think that's the whole thing. And so if you buy everything organic, then maybe you've now limited it down to like 50% versus 90% exposure to pesticides. And so that's, I think, the huge thing that a lot of people who are against like everything organic is they'll say, well, it's not really that much better. And that's correct. Yes, the standards are very different. So my personal take is it's very expensive is to focus on the 12 dirty dozen, focus on those first. And then a lot of this organic processed food and this and that, I think that is going to be a balance versus like how much does it cost versus how much of it are you eating?
Yeah. And something else that I think is interesting in the nutritional landscape is trends, right? So last year it was all protein. This year it's fiber, right? Every year there's like a new focus on a specific food group or a specific type of thing that our body needs to function and do as bodies do. So we've gotten really far from this idea of just having a well-rounded whole foods diet. And also from what I understand, like the United States has had nutritional guidelines for the longest time that are founded in science, but the statistics that I've seen says that only 80% of Americans actually follow those nutritional guidelines. So I think like there's like a serious gap as far as health literacy. I think that's like a big thing that plays into it. But then also the health literacy is getting left behind and being taken over by all of these conversations happening on social media and all these trends that are coming out. So, how do you think that we kind of got away from this more well-rounded nutritional landscape filled with whole foods and to something that's more narrow and focused? Oh, get more protein, get more fiber.
I think a lot of that comes from just a lot of times with social media, influencers, products, marketing, they're usually talking about one thing, but then what happens is a lot of them are experimenting with themselves. They're very good at being able to, I feel this way, let me do this. And then they talk about it, but naturally you're going to talk about and promote something that you saw helped you.
Yeah.
So when that happens, I think now it spirals and then they see one influencer and then it's just a chain. Everybody wants to make sure they touch on it, they talk about it so they're up to date. And then I think this starts. And a lot of times it's just because people were just talking about it and it gets blown up. I also think that we're missing the point. I think a lot of this, like what you mentioned with the whole foods, just balanced diet in general, what I think people are also missing is the key is all these things that people are saying, all this amazing information that they're giving you, take it and figure out what is causing inflammation for you. What is causing you to have your hormones go out of balance? What's causing you to have, are you having pain? And what is contributing to that? Is it the food? Is it the products? Or is it your emotional regulation? Is it not being able to process emotions and handle them properly? And I think once you figure that out, I think focusing on that and fixing that first is more of a key so that you can get into a balance eventually. And I think balance, I'm also against the term balance. I'm very much into the term just a cycle instead of trying to create this perfect circle where everything's perfectly balanced. I think it changes, and that's what people don't realize. It changes. There are times where it's like, yeah, I need to eat a lot more carbohydrates because of the movement I did today and because of this. And there are other times where it's like, okay, I'm not doing well with it right now because right now my gut is very inflamed and I need to
Yeah.
back off and eat maybe foods that are not so gassy and this and that. And so I think it's hard because there is actually no like set like rule for everybody. This is what you should eat to lose weight or to be healthy or to prevent cancer. It's very individualized. And I think what we are missing in order to get very in tune with that, you have to get very in tune with your body and you have to really take time to see how you're reacting to certain things that you're doing. And I think because of our go, go, go lifestyle, people have gotten away from that type of reflection.
Yeah.
And that's where this whole, when somebody says something, now you're just gung ho about it. You want to hear more about it. You're just all about fiber. Now you increase the fiber and you're not attending to like maybe some of the healthy fats or other things that are supposed to go along with it. And now you're creating an imbalance by doing that because you've gone too extreme. So, and that's what happened with protein. I really think that's what happened. People went way too extreme. And now they're like, okay, well, let's focus on fiber. That's been ignored. I don't know. That's too much protein. The recommendation is too much. And it's because you have to, when you eat protein, when you eat a lot of protein, you have to also eat a lot of carbs with it. You cannot just increase the amount of protein for certain people. Again, it depends on a lot of and a lot of it is linked to how your hormones are on, do you need to increase the amount of carbs with the protein or do you not? Do you need the low carb diet? There's good evidence, right, of low carb and ketogenic with cancer patients. But again, those are people that have a certain type of cancer for a specific purpose, and it's not just everybody. So I think that's the other thing, people not realizing that all of this advice needs to be very individualized.
Yeah, and I think anecdotes, like you said, play a really significant role. I think people just they're afraid, right? And they go to extremes. So if they're exposed to this thing, they're going to get cancer. And so there's a lot of fear. And I think we're in a time where there's a lot of medical misinformation, a lot of lack of trust in medicine, which is going to fuel this anxiety. And therefore, because social media is so accessible, well, that's the information they're going to go for. And not only is it just in the palm of their hands, but it's meeting them where they're at. Right. And I think that's a big thing too, is like in order to get something across, you need to meet someone where they're at. And so they're maybe on their break in the middle of their work day, or it's after work and they're relaxing. Like they don't want to read some sort of medical study or this long article that explains all of this information to them, but they might be more willing to watch a 1 minute video talking about this stuff, regardless of whether or not that person is credentialed or board certified or has any sort of expertise in that area. And so kind of going back to that idea of stress and this anxiety that people are feeling on a daily basis who are trying to live these like kind of perfect lifestyles. So how does that stress maybe kind of present its own health risk for these people?
Yes, you again make a really good point. There was a lot of buzz, I know, on social media because there was a post about there's this oncologist that had said, he said, I can predict cancer. I can predict every single person who will get it. And it's like, I think the point he was trying to make is that a lot of cancer starts so early. And what he started to notice, again, this was all anecdotal. Like it was all just him. What he's noticed is the type of people that usually end up with cancer because of their personality and how they're able to handle certain things. And that's the point he was trying to get across, that a lot of this starts early. And in a way, I agree with him in that sense. It's people who are very go, 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 type A, just not able to, process emotions, keeping emotions inside, not being able to talk about them. There is a lot of data and science behind that. Even with traditional Chinese medicine and Ayurveda, they talk about holding on to different energies and how it impacts your organs over time. And the problem is, of course, we don't have large randomized controlled trials on this. We don't have large studies to back this up, and we never likely will because there's no money in it for any of the companies to do that. And so it's like, yes, I understand. I am very data driven, but and I understand that there's no science or if there's no randomized controlled trials behind that. But I also agree with a lot of the, this is what I've noticed. This is anecdotal. This is what makes sense based on what we've seen and based on certain data that we're able to collect. And a lot of it does start with how you program your mind and being exposed to inflammation. It is proven that people with poor gut health are prone to inflammation and they're prone to getting sick. And people with poor emotional regulation, holding on to stress where you have chronic high heart rate, you end up putting more stress on the body. You are also causing your hormones to go haywire. You end up with cortisol spikes at night and you're awake, lying awake at 3 a.m. and you can't go back to sleep. And then we put on stress on our body physically, because I sincerely believe people really want to be healthy and a lot of people want to work hard to do it. So now you add on working out on top of that and then poor fueling your body. All of this is contributed again to it's all contributing to poor gut health. A lot of it starts with stress in the mind, stress on the body, and even negative talk and negative thoughts. There is actual science behind this. So I think that's what he was trying to say when he said that is all these things I can predict based on like the type of person. And a lot of it goes back to what I was saying is many of us with that type of culture that has been promoted, I feel like it's been rewarded. So we all tend to kind of go towards it. And I think it doesn't allow us to do a lot of self-reflection and emotional regulation that should be taking place to help prevent a lot of this. And so I feel like there are a lot of things that can help us. That's why I really like also the recent promotion and trend into mental health. And that's also huge. I think bringing that awareness is big because for years, decades, this is not something that people have focused on. And I think it's going to make a big impact, but a lot of it requires inner work and healing. And again, for that, there is a lot of science when it comes to cancer prevention. And so I think that, long story short, a lot of this, it's hard to do all of this all day, every day. My biggest advice is looking at how your day is structured. What is the one thing that's causing the most stress? And you focus on that, on how to decrease it. And then coming up with a method where you are able to build in a 5-minute daily self-reflection. And it should not be something hard or something cumbersome. It should be something that you're able to upkeep and maintain, whether you're doing it through breathing or through yoga or journaling or whatever it might be. I think it's very important to build it in early on, because the older you get and the more busier and all this stuff that happens, it's harder to incorporate it. So I think it's a good building block to have in a daily routine.
Yeah, so you'd mentioned a bit earlier, it's kind of getting rid of that idea of balance and focusing more on this cycle. So, can you maybe talk a little bit more about what a realistic, sustainable, healthy life actually looks like?
Yeah, so when I talk about it, I say it's kind of like the cycle of balance instead of the circle of balance. It's like, really, when everyone thinks of balance, they're like, okay, I'm supposed to balance. I'm supposed to give equal time to career, family, friends, blah, like all this stuff. And when you do that, that's when you lose sight of what really needs to be balanced for you. So if you currently, if you're somebody who's got a very busy career, you've got kids, you've got it, I encourage somebody to take a look at that and look at their cycle at that point in that life, in that phase of life. What do you need to focus on? What are the top three things that you really need to focus on? And it may be career, health, family. Okay, so if those are the three priorities, then you need to pull back from a lot of the other things. I think we have a hard time saying no to things, social events, things with, and it's not that you don't do them during that time, it's just that you pull back and you do them a lot less. If you're able to maintain a good balance of, are you getting a good night's sleep? If you're not getting a good night's sleep of 7 to 8 hours consistently, then that is something, if that is important to you and that's not allowing you to function in your daily life at work, and it's causing you to be short with like your friends or your family, that is a focus that you should do. So if that means that you need to go to bed at 8:30 because you have to wake up at 4:30 or 5, then that would be an example of where at that point, that in that phase of your life, sleep becomes a priority. You say no to things that are going to keep you up late. So maybe you don't go to dinner at 7:30. Maybe you switch to going to dinner at 5:30 for a short period of time. And so this is where it's important to figure out in this phase of life, what is important to me to focus on. And that to me is balance, when you're able to figure out moderation for the things that you need in that point, and not balancing every, like, are you able to do everything and be able to attend everything? And that is not balance. That is more of where you are performing for others instead of balancing for yourself and your health.
Yeah, and I like what you said about this idea of like phases, because our lives are constantly changing, and what you need to focus on maybe this year or this month might not be the same as in the next 6 months or the next year. And so I think it offers people a lot more flexibility. Like you said, I think people are really kind of they're very black and white. They're like, okay, this thing is bad for me, so it's going to cause cancer. And I think that they're like, oh, like I need these things, and that's what a healthy lifestyle looks like. But this idea of a cycle, and it's kind of this your needs, your healthy lifestyle needs are this kind of ongoing dynamic process versus it being this very just static kind of thing, and you're again overloading yourself trying to meet all of the needs of your life in one sitting. So I'm wondering now if you can maybe talk about the sorts of resources that you might share with your patients, or and even further, maybe resources that pharmacists can lean on when, you know, they're working with patients in these kinds of situations.
No, it's a great question. So I think there's a few, I think there's a couple of like apps that you can recommend. There is for products. So if you're looking at a product and you want to know how dirty is this product? How many hormone disrupting chemicals does it have? Or how many toxic, carcinogens does it have? There's a good app called Think Dirty that you can download for free. And there's certain things that you can get for free. The paid version has other things, but that's a good app that I've recommended to my patients when it comes to products. Supplements. I think supplements is huge, especially for us as pharmacists. I feel like we don't get enough training on it in school a lot of times or enough focus. And so it sort of becomes this thing we like to avoid, but there's a lot that pharmacists can do. So there's an website called NatProMed, and NatProMed has a lot of information about herbs and supplements that are science driven for pharmacists to utilize. And then for patients, there's an app called SupCo that actually Mark Hyman came out with recently. Like he's a founder of Function Health as well. And it's a really good app. You just put in your supplement and it'll tell you what's clean. Is it third party tested? What does that mean? And it assigns it a score. And that's a really good resource that I recommend. And then just in general for food, I definitely recommend the Dirty Dozen checklist. I also recommend going back to the basics of balancing protein, fiber, fat accordingly, and potentially just thinking about working with a health coach or nutritionist or somebody to just figure out what is good for you. Other resources that I really like, we're really huge into personalized medicine now. We're moving towards that. There are gene testing out there that tests for nutrigenomics, pharmacogenomics that sometimes I'll guide patients to in to figure out sort of how you respond. And this is all data driven. It's all true. It tells you, do you possess this, do you have this enzyme? Are you able to process caffeine quickly? Are you not? Like, and it helps you figure out very like little nuances that can help you throughout the day and just for daily things. So these are all great resources. And I think the last resource I'll mention is more for daily reflection and mental health. My favorite is called the 5-minute journal, and it's these questions, and all it does is guide you through a daily gratitude. It's very quick, and it sort of forces you. It's a good thing to keep on your nightstand to do right before bed.
Awesome. So, well, thanks for sharing all of those resources. You mentioned about how pharmacists don't really, and I think across the board for doctors across practices, don't really have a lot of training in nutrition and supplements. And it seems like now that supplements have really kind of taken off, and it's not just like vitamin supplements anymore, right? It's not just iron, it's not just vitamin D, it's like turmeric and elderberry and all these different things. So I think you're right. There isn't a lot of education on it, and pharmacists are kind of left like learning on the job. I've done some coverage and I've talked to some people about drug herbs. Herb interactions and discussions of, oh, turmeric has cancer killing properties, but we don't have a lot of evidence to support that. So I think you're right. There needs to be more focused attention on education of nutrition and therefore also including supplementation. So kind of wrapping up a little bit, wondering if you can share any key takeaways from this conversation that you think listeners, whether it's an individual who's not a medical professional or a medical professional, can bring into their lives or practice.
Yes, and real quickly, I'm going to just say something quick about turmeric. So, the problem is the turmeric supplements at high doses. I think that's where we don't know or have a lot of data. And I think there's a lot of negatives with effects maybe on the liver or other medications that you're taking. And so, my whole take on it is, yes, turmeric is amazing, should be included in the diet in moderate amounts. And that's where you should be thinking about it and utilizing it. There's very few people that really need a turmeric supplement. It's very rare and limited that you should be utilizing it in a supplement form. Now, I'm not talking about turmeric shots. I'm talking about pills with like 1,000 milligrams of turmeric and that sort of stuff. And there's a lot that you can do naturally, combining it with black pepper to make the effects better than taking it in a supplement form. But going back to key takeaways, so I would say key takeaways from this would be when it comes to products, start with what are the products that you use the most of or touch your body the most, and just focus on making the top two or three products better. don't worry about everything else. So if you're drinking, look at water, look at things that touch your body, bed sheets, maybe things that you're utilizing for a long period of time. When it comes to food, my biggest recommendation is looking at when it comes to organic versus not, look at the Dirty Dozen, focus on that, utilize frozen organic foods, utilize when it comes to box foods instead of cans. I really like Whole Foods' cardboard boxes where they have beans and everything comes in paper cardboard boxes and not in aluminum cans. Start looking at things like that and get like smart with how you want to, where you want to spend your money when it comes to organic and not going crazy with buying everything organic. And then I would say the last thing with food would be really just, yes, the answer really is a good balanced whole foods diet. However, that's very difficult to do. It is difficult for the average person to figure out what, how much do I need to eat in a day? What do I need to do? Exactly what are my meals? I would encourage everybody to take time and like take like an admin day and really look at that and figure out and craft like these meals that you can like go to so that you don't have to think. The idea is efficiency and just having things show up without having to think. And so if you spend time and put in the forefront in that, whether it's hiring a nutritionist or somebody to help you, it will help a lot towards the end to figure that out. And then the last thing is the balance is it's a cycle of balance and not a circle. And think about what phase in life you are in and what are the things that you need to focus on. Don't try to focus on everything. So don't try to focus on friendship, family, health, career, joy, all of these things. Figure out the top three things that are the most important to you. Focus on those. And then it may change the next week or the next month. And that's okay. But you are allowed to move it. It should be fluid and it should not be a fixed thing. And that can help with a lot of stress and inflammation in the body.
Awesome. And do you have anything that you can maybe say for pharmacists in terms of like patient counseling or things that maybe they should be more aware of as they're being approached by their patients with cancer who are looking and talking about all these different things?
Yes, that's, and I will say, as an oncology pharmacist, counseling patients is huge. It's a huge part of my job, and my role. And the biggest thing, especially with patients on chemo and stuff like that, is it's all overwhelming. There's so much information, it's too much. So the thing that I think I didn't even realize that I've come to realize that most pharmacists don't is we actually do play a huge role in sort of serving as a health coach for these patients. And the biggest thing that I think gets left out is time management skills. And so the largest thing that I think that I can tell pharmacists include are tips on time blocking for patients. So I'll do that sometimes and I'll come up with four boxes for them on here's something that's urgent. Here's something that's important. Here's something that needs to be addressed, but not now. And then the fourth thing is here are things that are sort of in the background that we don't need to really get all hyped up about. And then putting everything in there based on their medication, food. And just an example of this would be I had a patient start that was iron deficient, had to start on iron along with all of their other medications. And they were severely iron deficient. And so the focus became how are we going to build in the iron supplement? Because you've got to take it apart from dairy, you've got to take it with some vitamin C, you've got to take it on an empty stomach. There's all these little nuances that it's so stressful. I don't understand how the normal person is supposed to figure this out unless you really sit down and write it and map it out. So that's my biggest advice as a pharmacist is when we're counseling to really look at lifestyle, ask them their daily routine to figure out how we're going to fit this in and not just information overload based on what we know about the medication.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much, Sonia, for hopping on today and talking about all of this. I think on this, podcast, we do a lot of talking about different drugs and different types of cancer, but I think diving into these topics that are more like boots on the ground, I guess, that are happening, they're trending, your patients are bringing them to you is equally as important. So thank you again for jumping on, and I'm looking forward to having you on again.
Yes, thank you so much. I'm looking forward to it.
Thank you to all of our listeners for tuning in to today's episode. We'll continue breaking down the clinical science, the evolving treatment landscape, and the real-world conversations happening between patients and providers, especially where evidence, perception, and practice all intersect. If you found this conversation helpful, make sure to subscribe wherever you listen to your podcasts so you don't miss future episodes of Pharmacy Focus Oncology Edition. We'll see you next time.